Good morning. I'm Rachel Miro, and this is the California Report. Fire season is up and running in earnest. The governor has declared a state of emergency in Kern County, where the Bull Fire in the Sequoia National Forest and the West Fire in Tehachapi have together torched more than 15,000 acres and 30 homes and forced the evacuation of more than 2,300 people. About 1,000 firefighters are on the scene, doing their best to battle strong winds for control of the area. The active members of the Western Climate Initiative, California, New Mexico, British Columbia, Ontario, and Quebec, have released a proposal for a regional cap-and-trade program. The basic idea is that companies could purchase allowances for their greenhouse gas emissions, clean up their act, then trade extra allowances to other firms or bank them for future use. A national proposal stalled in Congress, but Governor Schwarzenegger said yesterday California and its partners are, quote, not waiting to take action. The Western proposal would be three times larger than a similar system in place on the East Coast. Some folks are talking about the two systems linking up, possibly providing a foundation for a future federal cap-and-trade program. The pressure is on for automakers, big and small, to show they're ready to compete in the market for electric cars and hybrids. In San Jose yesterday, at Plug-in 2010, General Motors announced its Chevy Volt is officially for lease and sale for a base price of $41,000. GM's VP of U.S. Marketing, Joel Iwanek.
This is a big moment for us because this is the thing that people have been waiting for.
The Volt goes 40 miles on a charge, another 300 on a gas power generator that powers the battery. But the Volt faces fierce competition. Nissan says 6,000 Californians alone have pre-ordered the all-electric, significantly cheaper Leaf, which goes about 100 miles on a charge. Nissan boasts those orders send a message that consumers want a car that doesn't use gas. This week, San Francisco began installing about 200 so-called smart parking meters. Smart because they can talk to wireless sensors embedded in the asphalt and report to the wider world when that spot is empty, or to the city when your car has outstayed its welcome. The options for parking managers extend far beyond that. San Francisco is hardly the first city to experiment with smart meters. San Diego, Oakland, and Pasadena have them already. L.A. is coming on board. The future comes courtesy of generous support from Washington, D.C., where smart parking is sparking a lively debate, as Kitty Feldy reports from KPCC's D.C. Bureau.
This is my husband's coin drawer, I guess you could call it, in the car. Lots of quarters, dimes, nickels. He likes to keep it full in case we come up to a parking meter that needs a whole bunch of quarters. And in Washington, a lot of them do. But not this one. This is a smart meter. It takes credit cards. So I'm going to stick mine in. Washington, D.C. Councilman Tommy Wells says that's not the reason the solar-powered meters are smart.
You can program them easily to where you can change the cost per hour for the parking, depending on the time of day or weekends, that they're easily programmable to be able to meet the needs of whatever you're trying to accomplish.
In D.C.'s case, the need was a new ballpark with limited parking. The city didn't want fans taking up valuable spaces in front of restaurants and businesses. So 2 years ago, the cost of parking near the ballpark went up to $8 an hour. Donald Shoup, who studies urban planning at UCLA, calls this performance parking. He says a parking space performs well when it's well-used and readily available.
Well-used means about 85% occupied, so the spaces are almost totally full, but 15% vacant, which means about one vacant space on every block, so that everybody, when they go anyplace, will typically be able to find a space right on the block where they want to park.
Los Angeles wants to move to performance parking. Shoup says it's trial and error to set the right parking price. He says San Francisco nudges the amount up or down about once a month. But on the streets of Washington, D.C., it's not the price that gets people talking about the new parking meters.
It is convenient, but only if it works.
It's not accepting a card.
Your credit card always gets stuck in the meter. That's why I carry around my fingernail clippers with me to pull it out. I've had to use that on quite a few occasions.
I've seen people have trouble, and I've walked up and gotten their credit card out for them.
That's D.C. Councilman Tommy Wells again. He couldn't promise to replace sticky meters. He's resigned to the fact that anything to do with parking gets people mad.
Messing with parking is one of the most politically difficult things to do. I go into some places and they boo me because I messed with parking.
To quiet the boos, about 75% of the revenue from D.C.'s new parking meters is plowed back into neighborhoods for bike racks, better signs, and other improvements.
I told folks that for the headache of changing your parking habits, you will get a reward of a reinvestment in our infrastructure.
And it's not chump change. D.C. could pick up $1 million a year from the new meters. Los Angeles plans to pour the extra revenue from its new meters into the city's general fund. UCLA's Donald Shoup says that's short-sighted.
The city of L.A. is in a tough budget situation. They're looking for every penny they can get. So I think it is really nickel and diming trying to get every penny out of the parking meter.
Los Angeles plans to take the concept of performance parking one step further by adding sensors that detect which spaces are empty. That technology is already in place in a few communities around the state, but LA's plan could include a twist. Information would be broadcast on a sign near a freeway off-ramp or sent to drivers via an app on a smartphone. For the California Report, I'm Kitty Feldy in Washington, D.C.
Moving right along, a delegation from California's High-Speed Rail Authority is in D.C. today, making the rounds to secure long-term federal funding. State voters have approved $9 billion in bonds to help finance a line linking Northern and Southern California, but with the price tag estimated to be somewhere near $43 billion, Deputy Director Jeff Barker says the project will need help from the nation's capital, lots of it.
Federal funding and an ongoing funding stream nationally for high-speed rail is what will help us to secure the private investment we will need ultimately as we move down the road toward construction.
Barker's got a new opinion poll in his back pocket to show members of Congress. Of 800 people surveyed, 42% support high-speed rail but worry about the cost. That's the California Report for Wednesday, July 28th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the SunPower Corporation, offering high-efficiency solar energy solutions to households and businesses in California and worldwide. The SunPower Corporation, online at sunpowersolar.com. The Mary Van Voorhees Fund and the Fallas Family Fund for coverage of climate change. And Barracuda Networks, innovators of content security appliances and hosted security services, protecting more than 100,000 organizations worldwide. Reclaim your network, barracuda.com.